Chapter 27. Proposal for silencing your Jersey enemies, and you ought to be thankful. How can you speak so? She answered, firing quickly. Knowing that my only crime was the indulging in a foolish girl's passion for you with too little regard for correctness, and that I was what I call innocent all the time they called me guilty, you ought not to be so cutting. I suffered enough at that worrying time, when you wrote to tell me of your wife's return and my consequent dismissal, and if I am a little independent now, surely the privilege is due to me. Yes, it is, he said. But it is not by what is, in this life, but by what appears, that you are judged, and I therefore think you ought to accept me for your own good name's sake. What is known in your native Jersey may get known here. How you keep on about Jersey? I am English. Yes, yes. Well, what do you say to my proposal? For the first time in their acquaintance, Lucetta had the move, and yet she was backward. Or the present, let things be, she said with some embarrassment. Treat me as an acquaintance, and I'll treat you as one. Time will, she stopped, and he said nothing to fill the gap for a while, there being no pressure of half acquaintance to drive them into speech, if they were not minded for it. That's the way the wind blows, is it? He said at last grimly, nodding an affirmative to his own thoughts. A yellow flood of reflected sunlight filled the room for a few instants. It was produced by the passing of a load of newly trussed hay from the country, in a wagon marked with Farfrae's name. Beside it rode Farfrae himself on horseback. Lucetta's face became as a woman's face becomes when the man she loves rises upon her gaze like an apparition. A turn of the eye by Henchard, a glance from the window, and the secret of her inaccessibility would have been revealed. But Henchard, in estimating her tone, was looking down so plumb straight that he did not note the warm consciousness upon Lucetta's face. I shouldn't have thought it, I shouldn't have thought it of women, he said emphatically by and by, rising and shaking himself into activity, while Lucetta was so anxious to divert him from any suspicion of the truth, that she asked him to be in no hurry. Bringing him some apples, she insisted upon paring one for him. He would not take it. Oh, no, such is not for me, he said dryly, and moved to the door. At going out, he turned his eye upon her. You came to live in Casterbridge entirely on my account, he said. And now you are here, you won't have anything to say to my offer. He had hardly gone down the staircase, when she dropped upon the sofa, and jumped up again in a fit of desperation. We'll love him, she cried passionately. As for him, he's hot-tempered and stern, and it would be madness to bind myself to him knowing that. I won't be a slave to the past, I'll love where I choose. Yet having decided to break away from Henchard, one might have supposed her capable of aiming higher than Farfrae. But Lucetta reasoned nothing. She feared hard words from the people with whom S. he had been earlier associated. S. he had no relatives left, and with native lightness of heart took kindly to what fate offered. Elizabeth Jane, surveying the position of Lucetta between her two lovers from the crystalline sphere of a straightforward mind, did not fail to perceive that her father, as she called him, and Donald Farfrae became more desperately enamored of her friend every day. On Farfrae's side it was the unforced passion of youth. On Henchard's the artificially stimulated coveting of mature age. The pain she experienced from the almost absolute obliviousness to her existence that was shown by the pair of them became at times half dissipated by her sense of its humorousness. When Lucetta had pricked her finger, they were as deeply concerned as if she were dying. When she herself had been seriously sick or in danger, they uttered a conventional word of sympathy at the news and forgot all about it immediately. But, as regarded Henchard, this perception of hers also caused her some filial grief. She could not help asking what S. he had done to be neglected so, after the professions of solicitude he had made. As regarded Farfrae, she thought, after honest reflection, that it was quite natural. What was she beside Lucetta? As one of the inner beauties of the night, when the moon had risen in the skies. as he had learned the lesson of renunciation, and was as familiar with the wreck of each day's wishes as with the diurnal setting of the sun. If her earthly career had taught her few book philosophies, it had at least well practiced her in this. Yet her experience had consisted less in a series of pure disappointments than in a series of substitutions. Continually it had happened that what she had desired had not been granted her, and that what had been granted her as he had not desired. So she viewed with an approach to equanimity the new cancelled days, when Donald had been her undeclared lover, and wondered what unwished for thing heaven might send her in place of him. 26. It chanced that on a fine spring morning Henchard and Farfrae met in the chestnut walk which ran along the south wall of the town. Each had just come out from his early breakfast, and there was not another soul near. Henchard was reading a letter from Lucetta, sent in answer to a note from him, in which he made some excuse for not immediately granting him a second interview that he had desired. Donald had no wish to enter into conversation with his former friend on their present constrained terms, neither would he pass him in scowling silence. He nodded, and Henchard did the same. They receded from each other several paces, when a voice cried, "Farfrae!" It was Henchard's, who stood regarding him. "Do you remember," said Henchard, as if it were the presence of the thought, and not of the man which made him speak, "do you remember my story of that second woman who suffered for her thoughtless intimacy with me?" "I do," said Farfrae. "Do you remember my telling ye how it all began, and how it ended?" "Yes." "Well, I have offered to marry her now that I can, but she won't marry me. Now what would you think of her, I put it to you?" "Well, ye owe her nothing more now," said Farfrae heartily. "It is true," said Henchard, and went on. That he had looked up from a letter to ask his questions completely shut out from Farfrae's mind all vision of Lucetta as the culprit. Indeed, her present position was so different from that of the young woman of Henchard's story, as of itself to be sufficient to blind him absolutely to her identity. As for Henchard, he was reassured by Farfrae's words and manner against a suspicion which had crossed his mind. They were not those of a conscious rival. Yet that there was rivalry by someone he was firmly persuaded. He could feel it in the air around Lucetta, see it in the turn of her pen. There was an antagonistic force in exercise, so that when he had tried to hang near her, he seemed standing in a refluent current. That it was not innate caprice he was more and more certain. Her windows gleamed, as if they did not want him. Her curtains seemed to hang slyly, as if they screened an ousting presence. To discover whose presence that was, whether really Farfrae's after all, or another's, he exerted himself to the utmost to see her again, and at length succeeded. At the interview, when she offered him tea, he made it a point to launch a cautious inquiry if she knew Mr. Farfrae. "Oh yes, she knew him," she declared. "She could not help knowing almost everybody in Casterbridge, living in such a gazebo over the center and arena of the town." "Pleasant young fellow," said Henchard. "Yes," said Lucetta. "We both know him," said kind Elizabeth Jane, to relieve her companion's divine embarrassment. There was a knock at the door, literally, three full knocks and a little one at the end. "That kind of knock means half and half, somebody between gentle and simple," said the corn merchant to himself. "Shouldn't wonder, therefore, if it is he." In a few seconds, surely enough, Donald walked in. Lucetta was full of little fidgets and flutters, which increased Henchard's suspicions without affording any special proof of their correctness. He was well nigh ferocious at the sense of the queer situation in which he stood towards this woman. One who had reproached him for deserting her when calumniated, who had urged claims upon his consideration on that account, who had lived waiting for him, who at the first decent opportunity had come to ask him to rectify, by making her his, the false position into which she had placed herself for his sake, such as he had been. And now he sat at her tea table eager to gain her attention, and in his amatory rage feeling the other man present to be a villain, just as any young fool of a lover might feel. They sat stiffly side by side at the darkening table, like some Tuscan painting of the two disciples supping at Emmaus. Lucetta, forming the third and haloed figure, was opposite them. Elizabeth Jane, being out of the game, and out of the group, could observe all from afar, like the evangelist who had to write it down. That there were long spaces of taciturnity, when all exterior circumstances were subdued to the touch of spoons and china, the click of a heel on the pavement under the window, the passing of a wheelbarrow or cart, the whistling of the carter, the gush of water in two householders' buckets at the town pump opposite, the exchange of greetings among their neighbors, and the rattle of the yokes by which they carried off their evening supply. More bread and butter? Said Lucetta to Henchard and Farfrae equally, holding out between them a plateful of long slices. Henchard took a slice by one end and Donald by the other, each feeling certain he was the man meant. Neither let go, and the slice came in two. Oh, I am so sorry! Cried Lucetta, with a nervous titter. Farfrae tried to laugh, but he was too much in love to see the incident in any but a tragic light. How ridiculous of all three of them! Said Elizabeth to herself. Henchard left the house with a ton of conjecture, though without a grain of proof, that the counter-attraction was Farfrae, and therefore he would not make up his mind. Yet to Elizabeth Jane it was plain as the town pump that Donald and Lucetta were incipient lovers. More than once, in spite of her care, Lucetta had been unable to restrain her glance from flitting across into Farfrae's eyes like a bird to its nest. But Henchard was constructed upon too large a scale to discern such minutiae as these by an evening light, which to him were as the notes of an insect that lie above the compass of the human ear. But he was disturbed, and the sense of occult rivalry in suitorship was so much superadded to the palpable rivalry of their business lives. To the coarse materiality of that rivalry it added an inflaming soul. The thus vitalized antagonism took the form of action by Henchard sending for Jopp, the manager originally displaced by Farfrae's arrival. Henchard had frequently met this man about the streets, observed that his clothing spoke of neediness, heard that he lived in Mixon Lane, a back slum of the town, the pissaller of Casterbridge domiciliation itself almost a proof that a man had reached a stage when he would not stick at trifles. Jopp came after dark, by the gates of the storeyard, and felt his way through the hay and straw to the office, where Henchard sat in solitude awaiting him. I am again out of a foreman, said the corn factor. Re you in a place? Not so much as a beggar's, sir. How much do you ask? Jopp named his price, which was very moderate. When can you come? At this hour and moment, sir, said Jopp, who, standing hands pocketed at the street corner till the sun had faded the shoulders of his coat to scarecrow green, had regularly watched Henchard in the marketplace, measured him, and learned him, by virtue of the power which the still man has in his stillness of knowing the busy one better than he knows himself. Jopp, too, had had a convenient experience. He was the only one in Casterbridge besides Henchard, and the close-lipped Elizabeth who knew that Lucetta came truly from Jersey, and but proximately from Bath. No Jersey too, sir, he said. As living there when you used to do business that way. Oh yes, have often seen ye there. Indeed. Very good. Then the thing is settled. The testimonials you showed me when you first tried Ford are sufficient. That characters deteriorated in time of need possibly did not occur to Henchard. Jopp said, thank you, and stood more firmly, in the consciousness that at last he officially belonged to that spot. Now, said Henchard, digging his strong eyes into Jopp's Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.